Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of November 12th, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good, good. And we're also happy to be joined by our other frequent guest, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good, good. Well, one thing that's not doing so well are the folks down in Washington, D.C. that are trying to pass a tax cut program, masquerades as reform, that in my humble opinion, and only my humble opinion, is sort of a giveaway to the well-to-do. But one of the, right, you've both heard about that tax program, right?
Yeah.
We don't have to beat that up too much. But one of the unhappy aspects of that tax program, in addition to somehow trying to limit abortions, right, you know, a tax program somehow, they're making some kind of attack on renewable energies, right, DR? What can you fill me in on what the background of that is?
Yes, it's apparently one of these, you know, longstanding fetishes on the part of opponents of clean energy, the elimination or the scaling back of the wind production tax credit, which has done so much to boost clean energy, especially wind energy in the United States. They want to slash it by over a third, weaken the solar tax credit, according to Think Progress, and eliminate a $7,500 credit for the purchase of electric vehicles. So basically, this is an effort to once again try to strangle clean energy by any means necessary. Mm-hmm. And with all the discussion about how certain members of the majority party in Congress in blue states may push back against trying to gut the mortgage interest deduction, you do wonder if members of the majority party in blue states, or even in red states that were clean, like Iowa, where clean energy has prospered, will they say, hey, wait a minute, this is not a good idea? Because if you go back a few years ago, Chuck Grassley, the senator from Iowa, even though he was, you know, nobody's idea of a climate hawk, he always tried to push back against efforts to gut the wind production tax credit. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see if Iowa representative basically say, hey, we don't like this idea at all.
Yeah, I mean, and notably, all of these tax credits that are being shut down were part of a major bipartisan deal reached in December of 2015. So you know, this is a bipartisan deal that was reached in December of 2015, and it was intended to, you know, extend the credits for several years while they were being sort of reduced or phased out, and basically leaves 100,000 U.S. wind workers without a job and shuts down 500 American factories. Mm-hmm. And I don't know for sure, but I'd be curious to compare that with how many jobs possibly we could get back from the coal industry, right? Yeah, you know, I mean, I have a feeling it's, you know.
Well, just to be clear, now, if either of you guys know better, tell me, but the production tax credit, right, it's this PTC, you hear it bandied around a lot, but the production tax credit is essentially a credit, direct credit on the taxes that your wind farm pays that's based on how much energy it produces, right? I mean, it's a way of rewarding the generation of clean energy, and in my understanding is that reduction in the taxes makes many wind farm proposals financially viable, right? I mean, it's critical to get that basically that tax credit so that you can build a wind farm, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why, I mean, so the PTC is important. And of course, the similar things for solar panel kind of proposals, because the 20-year calculation on return on investment has to include those tax credits from the government. But I guess to your point, go ahead, Mariah.
Well, you know, I mean, and then of course, you know, as Trump is cutting the clean energy funding, just as Beijing plans to invest $360 billion in it by 2020, creating 13 million jobs. Yeah. So, you know, here we go again, yeah, making America late again, as DR has said, you know.
Yeah, and I think that if you look at the tax, I bet that in that tax program, tax proposal, there's plenty of subsidies for fossil fuel companies, right? And those don't even get just the R&D credit for those guys is enormous. So, well, I think that the, I guess that once we say tax in a, since we now can, we can say tax because we're talking about a tax program, I guess I'll just put this piece of red meat in front of you, DR. Should they include a carbon tax?
They certainly should. Will they? Well, that remains to be seen, doesn't it?
Yes, yes. And the idea of some of the proposals around carbon taxes would be to either reduce the individual rate. I mean, you could reduce the corporate tax rate by taxing carbon, right? I mean, you get all that revenue. Mm-hmm. I mean, you might object to exactly how the revenue is used, but it's conceivable that you could cut some of the taxes that are so near and dear to the hearts of the conservative wing of American politics by paying for it with carbon revenue.
You do wonder, since the Secretary of State has professed support for this idea, at least rhetorically, wonder what his opinion is now.
So anyway, taxes are out there. We will see where that tax program goes, and we'll follow all those little ups and downs. I guess the other big program in front of the federal government this past week that is intriguing, not clear to me, I can't explain all of the details, but long and short of it, sometime late in the Clinton administration, Congress passed a law regulation requirement somehow. I'm not sure exactly where it comes from, but there's a requirement that the federal government publish a assessment of climate impact on the United States, and that assessment be published every 4 years, right, DR? And through the years of the Bush administration and the Obama administration, national assessment, I think it's called, National Climate Assessment has been published and bandied about kind of as a political football. Right, DR, tell me what happened, over the course of the last few decades with regard to this National Climate Assessment document?
The law in question, it was actually passed, ironically enough, by, I believe, the last president of Mr. Trump's party, who actually acknowledged that the science was legit, George H.W. Bush. He signed this into law in 1990. And his son basically either, famously suppressed or edited up these reports. The Obama administration was much more proactive about releasing these reports. And then most recently, the Trump administration released in a Friday afternoon news dump the most recent National Climate Assessment, directly contradicting everything members of his administration have said. It basically recognizes the risk. And it's basically, according to the Washington Post, the report says that that climate change is driven almost entirely by the burning of fossil fuels, warns of a worst-case scenario where seas could rise as high as 8 feet by the level of 2100, and details climate-related damage across the United States that is already unfolding, unquote. So the speculation is that this report will basically make it very, very difficult, if not impossible, for EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt to go after the EPA's endangerment findings showing the risk that greenhouse gases pose to human health, because how does he contradict something that his own administration has released?
Yeah. Well, and I guess that the biggest, so I don't know what you've got to say, Mariah, but can you comment on why do you think Trump, is it just stupidity? Is he playing nine-dimensional chess? I mean, why would the Trump administration, of all people, release what appears to be a word-for-word publication that the scientists created that seems to have universally been accepted as accurate and faithful to the facts?
Well, so, I was actually just talking to my neighbors about this yesterday, and, I wonder if he released it because it was already leaked, right? So really he had nothing to gain by suppressing it. Back in August, we did a whole podcast episode. August 14th, we did a whole podcast episode about how the New York Times, published this report. They actually made the whole report available because there was concern that he wouldn't release it, sort of as, George W. Bush did, or would have tweaked it. So, to some degree, what would he gain by changing it or altering it? Because it was already out there. I mean, the whole report, I downloaded it. I have the whole report, and so And then I also kind of wonder if maybe what they're going to start saying is, well, sure, climate change exists and it's caused by humans, but it's good for the planet. We've heard some twitterings about sort of, you know, it's good for plants. We need plants need carbon dioxide.
Isn't that the lady who's going to be the National Environmental Committee?
The head of CEQ, yes. Kathleen Hartmann-White. She's one of those proponents of that sort of idea.
Right. And Lamar Smith did a whole report about that as well.
Lamar Smith, so if you follow this show, you've heard me fulminate and castigate and generally dismiss Mr. Lamar Smith. But I guess he's retiring.
Right. He was a science chairman. Yeah. The anti-science science chairman, as TR said. Yes.
Mr. Smith goes from Washington.
Yes. Well, we don't let the door hitch on the way out. But well, I guess I hear you, but I guess I tend to agree more with DR's assessment is that this can only by legally publishing it. So the thing leaks, you can say, well, some bad person leaked this report, but to have the imprimatur, to pull up a childhood good Catholic phrase, the imprimatur of the U.S. government on this report as being legitimate can only create headaches for them. Right, and then, well, I mean, right. it guarantees, as you were saying, is that the endangerment finding, which of course is the root political statement by the EPA that carbon dioxide is a pollutant gas and must be regulated, right? Deemed by the Supreme Court, very important. That endangerment finding, it makes it almost impossible, right?
Right, that goes back to the necessity defense. It's one of those things where if we have the endangerment finding, which defines carbon dioxide as a toxic air pollutant, then we can say, well, you know, any concerned citizens that might be blocking things that are releasing carbon dioxide, they can say, well, we're doing it out of necessity to save people from this toxic air pollutant. Yeah. And so,
So you're saying that all those defenses. Yeah, you don't even have to have a witness anymore. You get the necessity defense, you're in court, you've turned off the pipeline, right? You did some act of civic disobedience, and you go to court, say necessity defense, and you drop on the table the National Climate Assessment release. I don't know. Interesting stuff. It's just, see, DR, you were saying that a guy named Cohn, I think another one of those sort of... I don't know, guys down in Washington, one of those creatures from the Black Lagoon that's now in the White House, was the one who let this thing get out?
Yes, I think there was a report, it was either in Think Progress or Bloomberg News, that basically made the point that ultimately the ultimate responsibility for deciding whether to release or not release this report fell to Gary Cohn, who's one of Trump's economic advisors. And Gary Cohn is one of the few individuals who accepts the science, and he decided to ultimately, he signed off on releasing the report without changes or edits, which is a very interesting thing. The speculation is also that that Cohn and other members of the Trump administration did not want any distractions from trying to get this tax reform passed. And as a result, they decided to basically just dump this out on a Friday and therefore, you know, we can
bury it.
Be fully focused on getting tax reform done.
Wow. Hmm. Well, I guess, that's maybe the most plausible explanation. These guys are obsessed with that tax bill. Mm-hmm. We will, if anyone ever ferrets out the sort of arcane justification for releasing this report by our Twitterer in chief, we'll let you know. But it seems strange, but it's good news, right? It's mm-hmm. the facts are out in the public. I guess the other interesting topic, or at least it is interesting to me, is what's going on in Saudi Arabia. So just to, if you haven't been paying careful attention to your Foreign Affairs Quarterly, the family of Saud, King Saud, is basically a family, right? And there's King Saud of Saudi Arabia, and for the last 60, 70 years or more, they have been running Saudi Arabia with all the oil wealth underneath it, and all those extended cousins and second cousins, all those guys, they're all related, and they all have unimaginable wealth from basically American dollars flowing into Saudi Arabia, right? Fine, fine. And there's all kinds of history, right? We don't have to go through, rehearse all the history of Saudi Arabia. This, Pat, and so from a climate hawk's perspective, Saudi Arabia has enormous impact on the fossil fuel industry, right? Which is what we're all about, right? And I mean, addressing the use of fossil fuel is very important to climate hawks. Here is the major fossil fuel producer in the world, and they are undergoing some kind of political turmoil, right? So can you explain it, JR? Do you want me to? Who wants to take it? Take the story from here.
I think there are a number of segments in MSNBC last week explaining what's going on here. But the gist of it is that apparently the heir apparent to the Saudi throne is basically
he's like 32 years old, right?
Yeah, he's basically trying to eliminate all the competition, and he's basically had, you know, basically tried to have a number of those potential rivals locked up, or basically legally harassed. Uh-huh. And one of the individuals that's been the target of this is a fellow by the name of Waleed bin Talal, I believe Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal, who's a major, major player in the United States and has been for a number of years now a major shareholder in News Corporation, the parent company of Fox News. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very interesting to see that take place.
And so this young man, who's, I say, 32, he is the favorite son of the older king. He's locked up all of his cousins in the Royal Sonesta in downtown Riyadh someplace, right? They're all under house arrest. They can't leave the country. It turns out that this guy, he's got initials. I think it's BSM or SBM or something. I won't pretend to pronounce his name. He has some relatively forward-thinking ideas. I guess, I mean, it's like to the point where he might even let women drive cars. He's that that progressive and that far advanced. And I guess he's the guy who's in charge of having a company called Saudi Aramco, right? So Aramco is this enormous oil company, and Aramco stands for Arab American Company, right? So this thing goes back a long ways of America. And right now it's a nationalized company, I guess, in Saudi Arabia. But when Aramco has an IPO, I mean, it's trillions of dollars. Well, I mean, it's like a $1 trillion company, right? And our alleged president wants them to do the IPO on the New York Stock Exchange. I guess the FTSE in London wants them to come do it in London, but the Saudi infrastructure doesn't have the kind of transparency that would support an IPO. But long short of it, this young guy, this 32-year-old guy, we think wants to go public with Aramco, get money, and then reinvest it into things like green energy, right? Mm-hmm. It's this sort of convoluted thing that's going on. And at the same time, he is amassing all power in himself, which is a very dangerous thing to have a strong man in charge of Saudi Arabia. I just think it's something that is unclear as to what's happening, but it is going to have consequence for climate issues over the coming decades, right? I mean, this guy can't go back. I mean, he can't let those people go now. They're all going to be eating the breakfast buffet at the Saudi, the Royal Sonesta there for the rest of their lives. And man, that's not good.
Indeed, it's there was a piece in the New York Times about this, and they noted that the Lion King, if you will, the new young king, he is thinking about a future for Saudi Arabia beyond being dependent upon oil. So I guess he does recognize that there's going to be a post oil future, and he wants to be at the top of it.
All right, that's what I find intriguing is that on the one hand, this guy, you would think, seems to have at least a more international view. But the flip side is that I think that we would all agree that the whole functioning of a government depends on the process more than the person, right? And so this guy, if he can't be, Abdul Nasser who in Egypt or, some kind of strong man, he has to set up a functioning government where there's a process and there's transparency. And I don't see that as happening. And so for all his sort of good intentions at the perimeter, is it going to be a disaster at the core? anyway, it is my particular. I'm fascinated by that stuff because I will keep my eye on it and fill you guys in on the next round of craziness that comes out of Saudi Arabia. But when something big happens, you can say you heard it here first, right?
Exactly.
All right, so we got to put everything down. We'll put up links to most of what we talked about at the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can get to that blog through our Facebook page, which also has many other interesting sort of climate-related tidbits, so you ought to like it. It's at /massclimateaction. You can listen to this show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud. I say that every week because no matter which mechanism you're listening to the show on, there are additional mechanisms that you might find more convenient. So please check it all out. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks very much for being here, Mariah.
Happy to join you.
And DR, as always, thank you for being here.
Thanks.
And for all of you guys out there listening, we really and truly appreciate it. We hope to talk to you again soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.